Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet.
Yes, you don't have to change the consumer behavior when you get a compostable container. You can still just throw it away. But the challenge is that it's not actually solving the single-use problem. You're still having the waste. And oftentimes that material is, you know, decomposing in an anaerobic environment in the landfill and, you know, creating methane emissions. And there are very few composting facilities that are available. So it was clear to me that there was an opportunity for a more like circular solution.
Only 5% of plastic gets recycled in the United States, with a large majority of bioplastic and compostables that cannot be composted properly. Today's guest is Jason Hawkins, co-founder of Reusables. It's a zero-waste packaging company offering a subscription base for unlimited use of reusable packaging. I talked to Jason about how Reusables started at the height of the pandemic as a zero-waste food delivery solution in partnership with Uber Eats and DoorDash, how eliminating barriers that prevent reusables from being accessible is key, such as getting more locations to get on board as pickup and drop-off stations, really a classic chicken and egg scenario, and how he sees shareable vessels becoming the default through implementation of regulations, business practices, or consumer preferences. With already over 50 participating locations in Vancouver, Reusables is setting the stage for a new packaging system that is revolutionizing how we package food on the go. Here is our conversation. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our Season 2 sponsor, Digital Scope. Did you know your website has a carbon footprint? Well, digital technology has a larger carbon footprint than the entire aviation industry, and it's only getting bigger. Digital power consumption is increasing by 9% every year. At this rate, our digital carbon footprint could be responsible for as much as 14% of global emissions by 2040. If you're a digital-first company, or really any company with a website, and want to understand the impact your website is having on the environment, Digital Scope can translate visitor data into carbon measurement, all with a simple one line of code added to your website. Check out digitalscope.com/someone like you. The first 100 people to sign up get free access for an entire year. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we're going to get into Reusables and what the product is and the platform that you created. But what I would love to just get started with is just understanding why Reusables in terms of the business of sustainability and focusing on climate. Like, what led you to wanting to start a business in this area, and what were you doing before?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think like a lot of people, you know, yourself as well, Marco, like spend a lot of time outside, you know, you see yourself as kind of more of a conservationist, not necessarily an environmentalist, but you like nature, you want to keep it the way it is. So I think that's kind of been a flavor for me my whole life. I grew up in Vancouver, had the privilege of, you know, being able to live, work, and play on the ancestral territories of a lot of First Nations peoples. And I think that just brought about the power of kind of the lands we live on and, you know, an innate sense to be able, you know, wanting to protect it. So that might have been something that was instilled in me from an early age. Another story often sometimes I dive into is when I was 18, I spent about a year in Asia by myself. I spent a lot of time in Myanmar, which is used to be called Burma. And I remember being on a train and sitting next to some locals, and I had a plastic bag filled with noodles that I bought, and I finished the noodles, and then I was looking around trying to find a waste bin or garbage bin or something, and couldn't find one. And I looked at the guy next to me, I was like, where do you put this? Like, where does it go? And he's kind of looking at me confused, and he just was like, just grabbed the bag from my hand and threw it out the window of the train. You kind of look out the window and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this makes sense. Why we've gotten to where we are. And, you know, I think largely it's not that guy's fault, really. It's the way that we sort of designed how we go about, you know, consuming and you know, dealing with the waste at the end of the day. So, so I think that, you know, that sparked some interest into sustainability for me. And since then, I've spent the last 5-ish years or so, a little more than that, working in different types of sustainable businesses. So my first venture was a farm-to-table marketplace that I started in second year of university in Queen's University. It's called Rooted Foods Co. And we worked with about 75 local farmers, delivered food to students. We sold that to a grocery retailer in Ontario. And then I worked for one of the largest online grocers in Canada called Spud.ca. So I was there for a handful of years, and we ended up starting a company out of that that licensed circular e-grocery software to large grocery retailers like, you know, Carrefour in Europe and Walmart Canada. So so that's kind of been my background before Reusables.
And so obviously entrepreneur in kind of in your blood, you've done it from quite an age, looking into the climate space and wanting to be involved because of, you know, the experiences that you had. What was the connection to Reusable? Obviously it sounds like you've had experience at grocery stores and in the food industry, but what was that kind of spark or that light bulb moment for you to think, this is a business that maybe I should go fully into?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think beyond the obvious problem of like single use plastic waste and just the kind of mess we found ourselves in with lack of recycling infrastructure, you know, only about 5% of plastic actually gets recycled in the US. And I think the challenge with some of the potential solutions that are being proposed, like bioplastics and compostable stuff that often can't actually be composted or dealt with, you know, the business case became more clear for me when I was working with a lot of like large grocery executives and retail executives in different parts of the world that had like packaging waste or plastic on their top 3 priority list. So I started kind of double clicking on it. And then I was exploring what might be next for me. I was looking into ghost kitchen businesses, thinking about, hey, maybe we could start a zero waste ghost kitchen, and had a few more conversations with entrepreneurs and investors and people, and really started to look at some of the legislative landscape that was coming down the pipeline. So especially in Europe and other places in the world. And then now in Canada as well, like, the government is banning single-use plastic and businesses are going to be forced to adapt. So it was very clear to me that there was a gap. And, you know, when I looked at what were the solutions that exist today, the obvious one is, well, let's just use a better material. Let's use compostables. But if you actually look at how that's being dealt with, yes, you don't have to change the consumer behavior when you get a compostable container. You can still just throw it away. But the challenge is that it's not actually solving the single-use problem. You're still having the waste. And oftentimes that material is, you know, decomposing in an anaerobic environment in the landfill and, you know, creating methane emissions. And there are very few composting facilities that are available. So it was clear to me that there was an opportunity for a more like circular solution. So that's when we started to look at, okay, like how can we actually, you know, look to reuse things in a different environment beyond just single use and throwing them away. So, yeah.
And I'm familiar with Spud, and for people listening, it's essentially a distributed grocery store, but I'm familiar with it at our office because we get a Rubbermaid container from Spud with our fruits, and we put it all over our office. And then next time they come to bring the next one, they grab the Rubbermaid container to do that they do that for the home as well. So was seeing that kind of process a bit of the, like, people are starting to get used to this idea that why wouldn't we just use a container and then reuse that container? Like, how did you make that connection? Because I think about reusables, and we should probably just talk about what is reusables from your side. But when I think about reusables, it does seem like a complex, it's simple, but it does seem like a complex problem as well, because you need to get restaurants and on board, and then you need the consumers on board, and then how does that all work? And so I'd love to just kind of, you know, understand a bit about how did that idea turn into a business, and what is reusables, and what were some of those challenges to kind of come to this mm-hmm. idea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm glad you make that connection to the spud bin, because it certainly was an impetus for my co-founder Anastasia, Kiku, and I, who we were both working for Spud at the time. And you know, I will give a shout out to Corbin Beret, who's heading up Spud right now as well. And we're looking at working on how reusables and Spud can support that take back program. But basically, it's like, you know, you have that reusable vessel where your groceries get delivered to you, and then it's at your home. And then the next time the delivery driver comes, you give the vessel back to the driver, and there's no plastic bags, and they can take back packaging. So we thought, like, okay, well, where else can we apply this vessel? So our first application was in the height of the pandemic. It was, I guess, kind of springtime, just before in 2021. And we launched a zero waste food delivery solution in partnership with you know, Uber Eats and DoorDash in Vancouver. So we were able to offer consumers in East Vancouver a very easy way for them to get their, you know, takeout, which at that point was the only option was to get it through delivery or pickup. And we made that possible to them through, you know, at that point, it was just a bare bones inventory management system in Excel. We kind of just launched it to really see, like, you know, answer some basic questions. Like, do people want this? Does anybody really care about this? Do businesses want this? Like, are they thinking about their waste? Like, do they want to pay for it? And then, you know, like, is this, like, logistically and, like, financially viable? So we put that out in the market, and we did about a 4-month pilot test. And the results were, like again, I was still working full time at my previous company, and we were just trying to see if this worked. And the results were staggering. Like, we wanted to sign up 100 people over the course of that pilot. We ended up signing up 200 in the first 2 weeks. We wanted to get 5 stores on board over the pilot. We ended up getting 10 in the first 3 weeks. So we were just like, okay, you know, there's clearly something here, and people are ready for this now. So that's when we started to make some more investments in thinking about, like, if we were to design a system that made it as seamless as possible for people to be able to borrow and return reusable packaging for takeaway, what would that look like? And then how would it be designed for a restaurant as well? So to answer my own question, I guess, is the way we went about it is we looked at different models that could potentially solve it. So looking at the first, an obvious one was a deposit return model. So we tried that out, but very quickly realized that it wasn't going to solve the problem at scale for a number of reasons. The first reason is that you have to pay money up front, and people don't really like paying, you know, a $2, $3, $4 deposit on top of their takeaway stuff. The other reason is there was accounting issues related to, like, the store gets the money and you got to get the money back and give it to the customer, or you're just kind of the basic deposit return system that kind of anybody can do, and there's really no differentiators. And then the last reason is just on the return rate side, we weren't able to get a very high return rate because it was challenging for people to really get the incentive across. Like, you know, why would I return this thing if I'm only really going to get like a buck back or 50 cents back or something? So we found they ended up just recycling them or hanging on to their home. And the whole point of reusables is to actually get a high return rate. That's where you get the environmental impact from a carbon emissions perspective and a return on investment from a financial perspective. So the way that we went is we designed a system that used technology to actually track the containers at the point of sale and at the return. So it's a library system in some sense. It's kind of a way to think about it where you don't have to pay anything up front. All you have to do is provide your reuser ID in the online delivery order, so in DoorDash, or you know, we have an integration with the POS system, and you can just basically, like, tap or select reusables, and then it gets assigned to you. And you only get charged if you don't return the thing. So it's kind of like, you know, if you rent a car and you put your card down and you don't return the car, you're going to get charged for it. So similar idea to that in a library system where we try to eliminate all the barriers for people to adopt reusables upfront, and then, you know, make it very seamless for the stores to actually use reusables in their operation. So we've had some success there, and You know, happy to talk about some of the iterations we've made through, you know, having an app, not having an app, and kind of where we're going next. But it's been exciting to see the interest from the community so far.
So from an ordering perspective, it seems pretty seamless for a consumer. They can put in their ID. Now, what happens in terms of the containers afterwards? So in the Spud example, it's a Spud is the one that's delivering. Spud's also the one that's picking up on their next delivery and is with all mm-hmm. within Spud. But for reusables, you know, the classic example is if I order from one restaurant this week and order from a different restaurant from next week, how does that, how do I get those containers from restaurant A back to restaurant A, or do I, or how do I get it back into circulation?
Yeah, great question. So the key here is that as a user, you can borrow from any store and return to any store in the network. So in BC, we have over 100 stores in our network, and we plan to grow that number at least threefold this year, just in BC. So, you know, the goal is to make it as easy as possible for people to return these things by having more store locations. So it's kind of like a network effect business in that sense, meaning there's more value for people the more stores we sign up. And then conversely, there's more value for the stores the more stores we sign up, because we get more users in that sense as well. So, so you know, we try to make, like, the theory here is like, okay, if it's as easy for people to return their container within 2 weeks, so give them enough time to any participating store that is like close to them within walking distance, then it's probably convenient enough. But then we go a step further and say, well, let's assume that there's some really lazy people like myself out there. How can we actually allow them to return their container at home? So that's when we look at partnerships with Spud.ca. So they have the reverse logistics already in place. Can we just return it to their bins? Or Recycle BC, you know, when we get to enough scale, can we just return it to the blue bin? You know, or working with DoorDash and Uber Eats, they have the delivery driver. What if you come and deliver your container, or sorry, return your container to them on your next delivery the following week? So thinking about ways that we can continue to make it more convenient for people is the way that we think we're going to be able to get to a higher impact.
Yeah, you have to create the kind of the flywheel, or the classic chicken and egg scenario, where you need to have enough businesses to make it more convenient for your consumers to adopt this. How is it on the business side? Like, how does it work for a business that wants to sign up? You know, from a costing, also just from a simple, you know, does it fit within their logistics quite easily? And I'm assuming they're the ones that have to clean these containers for the next use.
Yeah, so for the business, and the classic example of our you know, food retail, so restaurants, cafes, grocery stores for their takeaway, it's a very simple model. It's a reusables as a service. So they pay a monthly subscription that gets them unlimited reusable packaging. So they're seeing cost savings on their packaging waste, and we're really trying to incentivize them to push people to use reusables at their store. If they clean themselves, then it's cheaper for them. If they can't clean themselves, then we can provide a cleaning service for them. So we have a centralized cleaning facility here in Vancouver, where we're looking at building additional facilities to increase our capacity in other markets. So we can support that part of the business. However, you know, right now, about half of our clientele, our food business clientele, actually cleans themselves, and it's no problem. You know, a lot of them have dishwashers; they're washing, you know, some mugs or some plates already, so it's not an issue for them. They're happy to have that savings on the service fee.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. And all of the containers are, maybe you could talk about, like, what are the containers made of, and, you know, how does it, you know, ensure that they are able to be used in a, you know, they don't last a couple of times. They last a long time. Like what are they made of and what's that difference?
Right. So in our open network, again, this kind of classic example, many stores, many users, we are, we are the owner of the container asset, which means that we get to choose what it is. And we've looked at all different types of materials and lots of different manufacturers. And we have landed on a container. So that can be a cup or a food container that is made from stainless steel. So it's actually up to 75% recycled stainless steel and a silicone lid. So two completely separable materials that can be fully broken down and recycled to their base material at end of life. And, you know, it gets us a highly durable and high performance asset that often provides benefits beyond just being sustainable. So it can, you know, keep your food warmer for longer. It looks really great. It performs well. You know, there's no risk of like plastic leaching into the food or the drink if it is warmed up, and no real health concerns there. So we found kind of on all levels, it just performed really well. And it allowed us to get that, you know, high usage and high return on investment from both a carbon and financial perspective. So that's what we use in our open network today. And we've had a lot of success with it. In what we call like our closed loop environments, so you can think like university campuses, corporate campuses, malls, film and television sets. That's where we can get it, you know, a little bit more flexible, because you can think of like, you know, that as a closed loop environment. They can use whatever asset they want, and they can only return it to the bins that are available in that network. So we can be flexible on the type of material that they prefer to use there. But generally, we're looking at stainless steel as being kind of the best one for this type of model. And I think it's just one more thing important to note, that it's really challenging to use a high quality stainless steel asset when you have a deposit and return model. And that's why we're really looking at using technology and our more sort of tracking and library based system to allow for that. Because, you know, if we were to charge a deposit on our cups, for example, people would be paying like over $10 upfront, right, on top of their coffee. So it's just something that I found is not really feasible for people to participate in.
You know, I often bring a lunch whenever I end up going into my office, and I bring it in a reusable container, and that's kind of what I do. But it's much better than the containers you do get at a restaurant often. And the restaurant containers, what I love about this model is the only thing that at the end of the day really will just be getting it back. But other than that, the restaurant gets to deliver a better experience. The consumer gets a better container and experience, and the environment is obviously much appreciative of what you're doing. So it seems like a really great win for all of these, for these restaurants and for consumers, being able to get a container like that. And obviously it's quite an expensive container comparatively. Mm-hmm. Have you done any measurement in terms of like, what is the impact of, you know, a business or a restaurant being able to, you know, get a good portion of their customers on versus, you know, using the, you know, the containers that they currently have? Obviously, I'm sure it varies between, you know, restaurants that use, you know, heavily plastic containers versus restaurants that use maybe some of the compostable ones. Like, have you had any of that work begun in terms of just measuring impact?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've done an LCA, where like life cycle assessment, where we have actually a live model. Shout out to a company called CarbonGraph that we've helped us to build that, where we have inputs for all of the different materials in our value chain. So for example, if we were to change our manufacturer for stainless steel containers, like how would that impact our total carbon footprint on delivering a reusable container to a store and having someone reuse it? So what we found based on the data that we've looked at is, you know, we can get on a carbon side up to 5 times less CO2 emissions per use compared to a single use container made out of plastic. And then, you know, obviously on the waste side, we're looking at about 50 grams of waste diverted per reuse, depending on the size of the container, of course. So, you know, when you kind of extrapolate that over a large scale operation, the impact is quite substantial in terms of how we can impact
emissions. And if you looked at, you know, just in terms of carbon emissions overall, like landfill and waste makes up not a small portion of our total global emissions. So it is like of significant importance in terms of how we're going to tackle climate change, and also how we're going to tackle biodiversity loss and, you know, the way that we're polluting our environment. So we kind of look at it from both angles. And the cool thing about our platform is we can share these assumptions openly with the businesses we work with and the clients we work with. And a lot of the larger corporate clients are very interested in having this data in terms of, okay, well, how do we contribute to our impact goals by using reusables? So, you know, it's a critical thing for us to continue to monitor and adjust. And, you know, for anybody who's deep into this kind of, you know, carbon accounting and whatnot as well, you'll know that it is all about the assumption. So we look very closely at the data within our value chain, and then also the impact that we're having at a store. So that's, you know, I think from our perspective, we're really looking at how can we increase the number of outlets and stores that we have offering this type of thing. And then over time, you know, as the adoption grows within each store, because I think it's important to note that today, reusables is an option for people at stores. So they're not required to use it at a restaurant. You have to still ask for it. However, we see in the future, you know, whether it's regulation that changes or business practices or consumer preferences that continue to evolve, we see reusable packaging becoming the default, meaning if you order a salad from whatever Tractor, Field and Social, whomever it might be, Freshie, it's going to come in a reusable container. And as long as it's easy enough for you to actually return that thing, and, you know, potentially even more incentivized, and maybe you get some rewards from it as well, then we think that that will be the direction that we're able to go. And, you know, that will have the biggest impact environmentally.
This idea was, you know, there's some complexities. And like you said, you had to figure out all these. The beta tests seemed like the response was really, really great. So how did you go from that beta test to where it is today in terms of the kind of next steps, both on mm-hmm. the funding side, and how did you fund it? And then how did you build up that brand to start getting, you know, people aware that, you know, they should use reusables, because that's obviously a big task, is getting people to use it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like any startup, you go through a lot of ups, downs, iterations, you know, back to drawing boards, two steps forward. Like, it's, you know, we are still going through that. And the way that we've kind of been, the way that we've, Anastasia would, you know, laugh at me, I've been saying this, but really we always come at any problem, like assuming we're not the experts, because we're not. So assuming we don't know the answer, and really just trying to like, listen, you know, I had a boss once that told me you have two ears and one mouth for a reason, like use them proportionately. So we just try to understand the problem and really what are the pain points, and then design accordingly. And we do a lot of testing. So we're constantly iterating on our model, and we just try to like take the ego aside and not get married to any particular solution, but just really be focused on like, what is the impact? How can we replace single use with reuse, and what's the best way to get us there? On the financing side, we early on, we invested some of our own money to get it started. And then we raised a pre-seed round. We're fortunate to have a number of investors come in on that one, including LOI Venture, which is run by Ryan Holmes and Manny Pata out of Vancouver. They've been incredibly supportive of our mission. And we've also, you know, been very, you know, supported by the Sustainable Development Technology Canada and other accelerators, such as Earth Tech, Climate Ventures, Foresight Canada. So we've been, you know, there is a really great, the good thing about, you know, starting a business in Canada, and is that there's a lot of really fantastic people here that are here to like support you, especially if you're working in climate technology. You know, people are looking for businesses to invest in that are solving big problems. So we've really leaned on a lot of the support network and investors that are here to see that through.
What's next for reusables in terms of, if you think about, you know, you mentioned you're trying to triple the amount of businesses, you are obviously building much more demand in Vancouver and in BC, primarily here, but where do you see reusables in the next kind of 3 to 5 years, or where do you want to see reusables, I guess, is probably the better question.
Yeah. So the focus for us right now is to make reuse as easy as single use. So we're doing a lot of work on the product side in terms of improving the user experience, improving the store experience, actually, you know, making like the experience completely frictionless, app free, phone free. So just using like IoT technology to be able to allow people to borrow and return very easily without need to sign up for anything, no deposits, no nothing. So we're doing a lot of work there, which is going to allow us to expand both our open network into what we call like cities like eco-urban hubs, so cities that are focused on sustainability in North America. You'll see our name pop up in more cities with more stores in communities that are looking for this kind of thing over the next couple of years. And then on top of that, we're doing a lot of work with these closed loop clients. So focusing more on high volume environments like office buildings, like campuses, like venues, where we can generate a significant amount of impact in a small area. So solving for some of those clients is a key priority for us over the next couple of years as well. But, you know, in general, I think really we want to see the category evolve, and we want to be open about, you know, sharing our experience with, you know, with collaborators, with industry, with people who want to see the change, and hopefully being able to, you know, make a small dent in the problem that we're all kind of aware of. So yeah, so I guess, you know, we're very open to working with different people. We're hiring, you know, we will be raising, and very keen to continue to work with people who are passionate about this.
The obviously scale is there. The, you know, the closed loop systems just makes a ton of sense. Like, why would you ever deliver a single use plastic container in an area that people can just drop it back off after they use it? So like you said, everything from, you know, event spaces to universities and colleges and, you know, malls or, you know, ski hills and all these places, like it makes a ton of sense that they should be implementing these type of things. And I think you're right to say that I think a lot of these will be mandated and that will be the move forward. And I love the process, and we've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs on this show where if you can give a better experience to the consumer, and ultimately it really is no burden to them and they get the benefit of it, they are going to adopt it. And I think with this, you know, a restaurant gets to deliver their food in a better container, the consumer gets a better experience in a better container, and everybody can feel good that they're using something that is being reused versus being thrown out. So I think all of that leads itself to a great opportunity to get people on board to make change. We are getting towards the end of our show, and so I just wanted to ask. I asked a question at the end of the show, just around the silly book, The Lorax. The book is I enjoy it. I read it to my kids, and it's using our resources and overusing our resources and the outcome of what ends up happening. And ultimately, you know, a child catches a seed, and kind of the message is, okay, well, go make that change. You're one person with one seed, but you can do it. And that actually could spark an entire change. And so if I asked you, and if you're thinking about, you know, somebody was listening to this podcast that's an entrepreneur or wants to start something, or they're thinking about getting into climate, what would you tell them to do in kind of that first step?
Love that book. I got to reread that one, actually. Yeah, you know, it's a silly response maybe, or perhaps an obvious one, but I really think that the way to get started is quite simply just to get started. You know, it's not as risky as you think it will be. Be prepared to make an investment, but there, you know, if you're starting a business, you're fortunate enough to start a business in North America, there are a lot of different support networks that exist for you to be able to be successful. So lean into those, but certainly, you know, just get started. It doesn't have to be pretty. You know, people understand, early stage users understand that this is a beta, this is a pilot, or like just put something out there and get real market feedback quickly. And then, you know, just don't be afraid of continuing to change and iterate over time. But the world definitely needs more entrepreneurs that are willing to take a stab at some big problems. So go for it.
And I think, you know, the one thing to point out on your product, and we've had other entrepreneurs say this, is that your market is already buying packaging to deliver to consumers. And if you can provide them an alternative that is better or just as good, and obviously in your case it's better, your market is ready there. You just have to build out the systems to deliver it and get people to change. But there are people who are going to buy. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this, what you're building and the space to kind of call out is, you know, this is not a full readoption of something that is, you know, a whole new container or a whole something that's different. This is really a switchover, and a lot of people are spending a lot of money on containers. So, you know, I think the opportunity there is quite big. So how can people find out more about you and reusables?
Yeah. Feel free to visit our website. It's reusables.com, and you know, connect with me on LinkedIn. It's probably where I'm most active. And yeah, we'd love to hear more about how we could support each other. And always keen to chat with entrepreneurs and people that are working on cool stuff. So definitely reach out.
Jason, thank you, and congratulations to you and your team for what you've developed. And we're all excited to see and hopefully, you know, one day somebody comes to our house with a reusable container. So thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for having me, Marco. Take it easy.
This podcast is co-produced with The Brand is Female. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. And if you did, please share this. We're a new podcast, and I would love it if you could share it with a family member, friend, colleague, work colleague, share it on Slack, whoever you do, just share and spread the message of these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast, with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.